This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, good afternoon, my friend. How you doing?
Well, good afternoon. I'm in the cooler atmosphere than I was out in that parking lot.
Is it warm out there again?
Yeah, it's 84, and I don't want 84 in October, for goodness sakes. So I want a 60 and raining.
You'll probably get your wish soon.
I keep thinking. Yeah. I keep hoping.
Maybe on Thanksgiving.
Oh, gosh. There won't be any water in the Umpqua.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Well, welcome to the gardening show, and I want to thank you for listening if you do. And if you have any questions, you can call 673-4464. And no matter what I'm speaking about at that current time, you can interrupt me and ask your question, and I will attempt to give you the correct answer.
Yeah, I do it all the time, see?
You do what?
Interrupt you all the time.
Like you're doing right now.
Right now. Yeah,
but I ignore you.
Yeah, true. That's right.
But as dry as it's been, and it's not just this year, but the past two years, even maybe the past 3 years, the amount of precipitation and snowpack in our area, i.e. Southern Oregon, Cascades, mm-hmm. has been barely average or below average. And so consequently, that has a long-term effect on our watersheds, creeks, rivers, et cetera, and our groundwater as well.
Yeah.
And it also has a strangling long-term effect on domestic supply, because if this continues in maybe another 2 or 3 or 4 years, water usage is going to be rare. And my speaking today is about water and conservation in your landscape and your garden. So hopefully I can give you some tips, and hopefully I can, get you thinking about don't waste water, for goodness sakes.
Speaking of which, I got a question.
Yes.
We went over to Idaho over the weekend, last weekend.
Yeah.
And on the way back, it was daylight. You could see, actually. But anyway, the farmers, they were irrigating their fields in the heat of day, in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It wasn't just one. It was
all of them.
All of them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, why is that?
In farming, when it's that hot in those areas like Idaho, Eastern Oregon, mm-hmm. that kind of thing,
yeah,
that's simply what they have to do to get the crop to grow.
Oh,
like your lawn and the times and I know they have, a certain amount of that water is being evaporated, but a good portion of it, because so much volume mm-hmm. is coming out of those sprinkler heads, or gigantic sprinkler
heads.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, they drown you, for crying out loud. You don't want to run through those sprinklers. But that's the kind of water they need to get down into that soil, because it is a dry land farming, actually.
Oh, okay.
And they've done that for centuries, as long as they have.
Yeah. I thought of you when I saw that, and I said, that goes against what Mike Winters has
consistently said. Yeah, I know. But when I speak about those kinds of issues, I'm speaking about when I see businesses along Garden Valley or one of the streets watering a little strip of grass,
mm-hmm.
and most of the water is going on the sidewalk or the street, and it's 101 degrees,
yeah.
three or four in the afternoon.
And the kids are trying to run through
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And that's a real waste of water.
Yeah.
What the farmers are doing, I don't consider that a waste of water. I consider that, hey, they're growing the crop to feed us, for crying out loud. And, yeah, some of it's going to be evaporated, but none of it is being wasted.
Out of necessity.
A necessity item rather than a luxury. Keep the grass green, but it keeps turning brown because it's 101 every day.
Some of it was apparently for the cattle, because there was just a little row of irrigation thingies, and the cows were all around it.
Oh, yeah. They like to go run through the sprinklers.
Yeah, they do.
And that leads me into my water and conservation speech today. And, with this long, long day spell of heat and sun, and here it is, October, it's 84 or whatever, how is your landscape doing? And you think, gee whiz, Do I need to water or don't need to water? Yeah, you still need to water, but you have to be smart about it. You have to be smart in that you either water early morning or late evening or something like that, and do some things, and we'll get into that. But there's no need to panic. I mean, it's not going to all just dry up and blow away. But keep an eye on your shrubs and your trees, and hand water those that look stressed. Mm. You know, and first, as I've said 100 times, dig around at the base of a plant. If you see one that kind of looks weird or it's not looking like it did last year, dig around the base of that plant in that soil, not right up against the stem, but about, 6, 8, 10 inches away from the stem, and see how damp the soil is. Dig, 4, 6 inches somewhere down in there. And if it's bone dry, you need to water. Or if it's damp, I can skip another day or two. And if it is dry, give it a good soak at the base of the plant, especially if it's just a single plant or several single plants that are spread around your yard. But like I say, if it's damp, you can skip it. Or just give it a little bit of water, however you do. But don't just wholesale water because the sun is shining and it's 84 or 86 or whatever. And, it's fun sometimes to stand out there with the hose and put your thumb on the end of that puppy and just, go back and forth.
And you
kind of daydream. I do.
Give your fingers a massage.
Yeah, that's right. But if you have a mature landscape, one that's been in, more than 2 years, say, chances are if it's damp, the roots are deep, it's growing, it's maturing enough to survive, and it doesn't need as much water as it once did, like in the first year after you planted it, because they grow very quickly. Once you do it right, give it good soil, et cetera, those roots will get right down there, and as the soil moisture drops, the roots will follow, and that's okay. And it's going to be good. But the newly planted plants, like the ones you did this year, are going to need some water until they can get some significant rain. And I don't see any significant rain on the horizon. But
not yet.
But when I say significant rain, I mean at least 2 inches for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Really get a soak.
Not Hurricane Ian style.
No, not the hurricane thing, but, just a good 2 inches gives you a good soak. And if we had 2 inches every week, for, four months, we'd have plenty of water. We'd have plenty of snow because of the storms and the snowpack and all that. But a little bit of a sprinkle is not going to get down into the root system. So you really have to pay attention to your watering technique and be disciplined. And if you don't like standing there with a hose, let's say you don't have a sprinkler system, so you're watering with a hose going from plant to plant. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to stand there, get a lawn chair. Sit the lawn chair up in a place where you can get about 4 or 5 plants, and you can do it sitting there in your lawn chair. And then when those 4 or 5 plants are done, move the lawn chair over about 15 feet.
Turn the radio on.
Turn the radio on. Eat your tuna sandwich and go.
There you go. Yes,
that's okay, but. And that's the plants. Now, of course, lawns are a whole different ball game in that they're browning up right now, even when they're being watered. But they're just going into their dormant stage, and they just do that automatically. Even if there's some that a lot of folks are fertilizing and watering and really pumping it to it, and they're really deep green and looking really good. But if you're a haphazard waterer or a non-waterer and you just go with the natural stuff, don't worry about it. It's going to recover in the spring after we've had a good wet winter and they lie dormant and the sun starts coming out in April. They're going to be green, they're going to grow and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But go ahead and give the lawn some water if you want to, but there's no need to soak it at this point because you're not going to get your money's worth. You're not going to get any buck for your buck.
It's going to go to China.
No. Now, some plants can survive the day and the heat, the dry heat, all right. I mean, that's the type of plants they are.
Mm.
And that includes, like, most trees, shade trees, and evergreen, big trees, because their root systems are develop. They've been in the ground, say, 5, 6, 10 years, 100 years, whatever. But those root systems are massive. It's like the iceberg effect. What you see on top, you go, wow, that's a big tree. But believe it or not, that root system is magnificently large, too. And they grow, and they'll search for water. And you don't have to tell them, and they'll go for it. And
they can smell it.
Yeah, they probably smell it, right. But, you know, conifers like, you know, fir, pine, hemlock, they're very hardy anyway. And if they've been in the ground, like I say, 2+ years, they're going to survive without water. They'll make it. I've tested that. I've done it in my place for years and years. And some of my seedlings that I've planted, I don't water at all. And they still, 90% of them still survive. You know, I'm talking about firs or pines, things like that. Mm-hmm. But when I get say I'm putting in a Japanese maple up on, you know, behind the house or something like that, or along the creek, I take care of it the first year, you know, give it at least maybe 2 waterings a month in the heat of the summer. But the second year, it's about 1 watering every 2 months, maybe.
It's not a baby
and
anymore.
Then the third year, nothing. I don't even bother with it.
Nice.
You know, and they're all growing. I've never had one die from drought, and because they're a tough tree. And that's what people, you know, once those trees are mature in your yard, you can skip the watering on those and then concentrate the watering on your vegetable garden or your flowers, your perennials, you know, the plants that have smaller root systems. The ones that have the smaller root systems have a tendency to dry out more quickly because their roots are not deep. That's you kind of got to flip a coin and say, what do I want to live?
Yeah. Heads Carolina, tails California.
Yeah. You know? And then there's shrubs like junipers, dwarf mugopine, holly, or ornamental grasses. Those are all very hardy. No need to worry about, watering them when you get into a drought area. But you want to keep your eye on those flowering shrubs like rhodies, azaleas, ground covers, and for the most part are pretty hardy, but they can get through some of these tough dry times fairly well. Mm. But if there are anything that's blooming, you want to make sure that it has sufficient water and get it, because the sufficient water is going to enhance the blooming period, the size of the bloom, the longevity of the bloom. I mean, they'll all bloom even if they're starved for water, and they come out of winter into spring, and they got just a little bit of moisture, and they're not really, you know, getting enough moisture. Mm-hmm. They'll still bloom, but it'll be, instead of say maybe 4 weeks, they'll bloom maybe a week and a half. The blooms, like I say, will be maybe half size or three-quarter size, and there won't be as many of them because of the lack of moisture, adequate moisture. And it's not just for that time period. It's for the 6 and 8 months and 12 months behind them that they had to struggle just to survive.
To keep,
exactly. So, and ground covers, for instance, for the most part, are very hardy and get through dry times really well. I don't know. And there are many ground covers that are just tough as nails. They grow on rocks. They grow. I've got an ice plant that's beautiful. It blooms all summer long, and it hugs the ground and has a kind of purple bluish, and when it's blooming, and it is just, there's thousands of flowers on the plant.
Wow.
You know, and
nice.
And it just spreads like wildfire, but it only gets about 2 inches, 3 inches tall maybe.
Mm.
But it'll spread 8 feet in no time at all.
It does its job.
It does its job. It grows in rocks. It grows in gravel. It grows wherever it feels like it. We got a break?
Yeah, we got to do our job now.
We'll be back with some more rain.
And that's on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we're back. What's our phone number there, Mike?
Well, let's see, 541-673-4464.
672, isn't it?
I don't know. If you say so. Yeah, I got 673 written down. I don't know why.
Oh, okay.
Is it 672? Try them both.
I'm going to go check it out. You tell us about the water, and I'll be right back.
Oh, gosh.
Don't want to confuse.
I've only said that 600 times. How could I mess it up? I don't know.
I'll be right back.
Okay. I'll try to keep on going without you. And don't call me while he's gone. I don't know how to operate the phone line. But anyway, I'm talking about water and how critical it is to our area, how critical it is to our yards and that kind of thing. And there, if you look around, as you drive around, there's already some premature shedding of leaves on some of the trees. They're already dropping their leaves. Usually they last till about the end of October, 1st of November, before you see a significant leaf fall. And I'm talking from maples and oaks and birches and those kinds of trees with leaves on them. But over the last month, I've observed in different areas as I've driven around Douglas County that some trees are prematurely shedding their leaves. And the reason they do this, they're not dying, but the reason they're doing this is a survival thing for the trees, that they know that they can't, there's not enough water or energy to keep them to produce food, so they shed the excess leaves so that they can ensure whatever little nutrition they have goes for buds for next year. And if you look around at some of these trees that are shedding their leaves, you can see little green buds that are formed all along the stems. That's next year's leaf crop. And so whatever energy that tree root system has, it's storing it up for the new leaves that are yet to come. So what number is it?
You were correct.
I was correct. Well, I'm usually correct.
I know. I will never argue with you again.
It is 673-4464.
Yep, okay. It certainly is. And you can call it right now. No yeah. trouble getting through.
Yeah, that's for sure. Oh, gosh. But, yeah, and like I say, that happens when there's a drought situation, when there is a lack of abundance of water or too much heat for too long of a time. The tree knows what's happening and says, hey, if I'm going to survive to next year, I've got to get rid of some of these old leaves and let the energy go to the new buds that are going to be forming for the following year. So that's a simplistic explanation, but it's true.
Somebody must have heard us there on the line.
Okay, on the
yes,
line.
Yes, I did. Hey, Mike, thanks for being there. Hey, and I'm going to test your memory here. In 2012, out at your store there, you sold different varieties of peach trees, obviously, but we made the ultimate mistake of losing the band around the trunk to tell what variety of peach we bought from you.
And you expect me to remember?
So, yeah, well, don't you remember that sale?
Now it's coming to mind.
It's a full-size peach tree with a free stone. It's not a Red Haven, and it's about the size of a softball. And I wondered if that would ring a bell of what variety you would be selling back in those days.
Well, to tell you the truth, I couldn't honestly tell you. I could throw out a name to you, but it may be false. But
well, okay.
for the best advice, if you call the nursery at 679-8224 and talk to my wife, she's got a sheet of our trees on the desk. And if you you could explain the size, et cetera, and she may be able to narrow that down for you.
Oh, great. Now, can I trust that phone number?
What now?
Can he trust that phone number?
Yeah, I think you can. I'm not sure. Yeah, 679-8224.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being there.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
That's good. Oh, jeez. Okay. So, don't panic. Your trees are not dying. They're just getting ready to survive, okay? That's their survival mode, and they will come back, guarantee it. And perennials, of course, are also hardy, and they may look dead, you know, with the heat. You know, it's just like bang, bang every day.
I look dead in the heat, too.
It's like, oh, my gosh, how much more heat can these poor things take? But they're going to come back next spring. You'll see little buds on them again. Some of the perennials are fairly small, maybe a foot tall, 2 feet wide. That's about it. Some are a little bit larger. But if the leaves are curled, they're kind of brown, they look kind of crispy, but there's some green ones there, that means the root system's still alive. You can water it if you like, just to keep it alive for a little bit longer until hopefully winter comes. And but they will just go dormant, and kind of some of them will just die down to the ground, and you think, wow, what happened? But next spring they'll come up. They'll come up from the roots with brand new stems, brand new leaves, and brand new flowers. I mean, that's how they act. They know how to survive from year to year. They've been doing it a long time.
Country flower can survive.
Yes, they can. So, you know, just think, with this continued dry heat, and plants are just starting to shut down sooner than normal, simply for survival. So don't panic and pull them all out and have to go get some new ones. I have Japanese maples at my house that I haven't watered in many years.
Jeez.
Many years. And they're beautiful. And they looked a little scorched because it's been so sunny and hot forever. But when I go take a close-up look at them, and they're not readily available that I can drag a hose up the hill, up a mountain to water them. So when I was watering them, I'd get a couple of buckets and, you know, dip them into the creek and go up there and slowly water them there. But I only did it like the first 2 years. And maybe a little in the third year. But after that, I said, hey, live. I'm not going to mess with you. If you don't want to live, die. I don't care. But I was glad they have survived. I've not lost any that I can recall.
Great.
And I've got, maybe 10 to 12 different varieties just to see how they would work in the wilderness situation there.
Right.
Because that's basically, I live out in the boondocks here. And some of them are kind of shaded, and then some of them are in full sun most of the day, not all of the day, but most of the day. And the ones that are in partial shade look a little bit better. They look like they're ready for winter or fall or something, but they're not as the leaves in the full sun ones, and those are bigger trees. Those leaves are kind of curled and scorched, and they've had it, you know, that incessant sunlight at 102 or whatever for weeks on end, it gets to them after a while, you know, just like it get to a person.
Sure.
Yeah. But they're not going to die. They're just going dormant. And, you know, they're not weak plants or anything. They're just very, very hardy. And you need to, with trees in your yard or on your property at all, you need to pay attention to how they go through these cycles so that you just don't walk out there one day and go, oh, my gosh, my tree's dying. Not really, you know. And another way, if you don't see any buds, you'll see some buds, little tiny, you know, maybe the size of a big fat pinhead or something along the stems. Mm-hmm. But if you don't see any, scratch the bark. You know, just take your fingernail and scratch some of that outer bark away, not real deeply, just a scratch. And if the stem is green inside, the tree is fine. And if you scratch it and it feels dry and
rough
and you know,
yeah,
just dry, crumply, crippled.
Yeah.
That's a dead branch. You can cut that off, or you can just go down the tree. And if it's a lot of dead stuff in it, and then all of a sudden it starts to get green, cut everything off that's dead and keep the green. It'll come back. That's how tough they are.
Keep the green.
Yeah, keep the green. It's good for you. So potted plants, you know, that's something that you need to take care of, the ones that you put out on the patio or the deck. They're going to need a little more care since their root systems are confined in a pot. Mm. You know, they can't go anywhere. They can't expand. So they're really dependent on humans to feed them and water them. You know, it's kind of like babies in that respect.
Sure.
Yeah. So continue to water them as usual. And if they're outdoors, like on the patio or the deck, and maybe they've been in sun all spring and summer, well, maybe move them to a shadier spot. To kind of give them a little bit of a relief. And if you can, they won't, and if you can, if they're not giant pots, you know, if they're giant pots, you might have to get a couple of teenagers to move them for you. But a
couple of youngins.
Yeah, young ones, lots of muscles hanging all over the place. But You know, they won't require lots of water, but they require some, just like the usual amount that you give them. And even when the plants go dormant, they still shut down, but that doesn't mean that still means they need to eat and they drink and they are growing, but you can't see how they're growing. Usually the root systems are the ones doing the growing, and you can't see those, obviously. But the exceptions to what I've said would occur in plants that were, say, under stress from bugs or virus or disease or wounded by animal wounds, like some critter gnawing on the bark and eats half the bark off a certain...
Like a beaver?
Yeah, like a beaver or an otter. Yeah, right.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
Good. Or a dog, you know, I've had puppies that will chew on the bark and... You know, I don't know what the attraction is. I don't know how it tastes. I've never eaten the bark off a tree. But, you know, those stressful things can hurt a tree or shrub more quickly than drought. Because in drought, they've got that built-in protection system. But when some critter is eating on them, they can't swat them away. You know, they haven't learned how to do that yet.
Not yet.
No. And those deer, of course, can cause significant damage. And then you got the squirrels, the gophers, the moles, you know. They all often weaken plants to a point where the heat and the drought can't finish a plant's ability to recoup and continue to live. So if they've got several bite wounds or, you know, some of the bark is missing at the base of the tree, that kind of thing, it's harder for that tree because it's trying to heal itself.
Sure.
and conserve its water and stuff at the same time. And sometimes the tree loses.
Almost impossible.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you a little story.
Yes.
I was driving home one night, an old Highway 99 there. I come up over a hill, and there's a doe with her two little babies. They weren't in the road. They were right behind each other in line, walking on the side of the road. And I thought, that's a smart deer.
Staying beyond the white line?
Yeah. Yeah, right there on the gravel on the side. I thought, my God, that mama's teaching those kids.
That's good. That's good.
All right. We'll be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show right here on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Mamma Mia, that was a short break.
It was. Mamma Mia, did she do that?
Yeah, I think that was her.
Oh, okay.
I think she resigned.
Anyway, I've been talking about water and conservation and being aware of the plant watering needs in your yard and around your house and... you know, trying to encourage you not to panic if some of the leaves turn brown. It's that time of year, actually. And it's been a stressful summer with all the heat that we've had. And the plants respond accordingly because they want to come back the next year. So another item here to be aware of is location of plants in regard to water requirements is real critical. In other words, some plants require regular watering, and some plants require little water. So what do you do? Well, when you're designing or you're planting, don't mix those type of plants together, because plants that need little water with plants that require a lot of regular watering, it's not going to be compatible. Because if you water to save the ones that need a lot of water, you're overwatering the ones that need very little water. So when you decide on plant materials, make sure that you get enough information from the person or nursery that you might buy them from, and ask about what are the requirements for water. And if they say, well, once a week is good enough, and you say, okay, I'll get five of these, and then you plant them, and then maybe you want to get something, there's a lot of space between, maybe you want to get something that's colorful, but that needs maybe watering every other day, and you water the whole mess with one hose or one sprinkler, one of them is going to get just the right amount, and the other one is going to be drowning, or vice versa.
Right.
And
yeah.
So that's what I mean by plant placement. You have to know, you can't put a water seeker with an anti-water seeker, because they all have different requirements for a good, healthy life.
Not a good marriage.
Yeah, exactly. And if you do this, of course, you'll be wasting water where it's not needed and killing plants. And like people, plants have different needs. And just because they look the same, or you just think, oh, they're all green and they all got leaves. No, they're different. they have their own unique look, their own unique flower, root system, growth patterns, all that kind of stuff. So, in other words, don't mix junipers with rhodes or azaleas. Bad mix. Or don't throw a cactus in there either.
Oh,
bad mix. Group plantings should have similar requirements for water and food and sunlight in the same batch. You know, that's just keep that in mind. For instance, when
mix,
you,
but
yeah,
yeah,
but, yeah. And for instance, when you have those junipers planted, and after they're established, you should never have to water them again, for crying out loud. I've
nice.
Got clients that I have planted. Oh, they have a bank, a sloping bank, and it's hard. A sloping bank's hard to take care of, for crying out loud. So a juniper is a good item for something like that because they have plenty of room. Mm-hmm. They won't get overwatered. And they're a desert commodity anyway, so they like that, and they'll do well that way. And they're
kind of like a cactus.
Yes, exactly. And there are some cactus that will grow here in Oregon. I don't know the types, but you can see them in the High Cascades sometimes, way up around 5,000, 6,000 foot. So they're covered
wow.
in 8 or 10, 20 feet of snow. In the winter, and they have a two-month summer and get snowed on again. But, they're just tough, tough plants.
I killed a cactus. You know what I did?
What?
I watered it too much.
Of course, and it got soggy, and
it
just kind of bent over, didn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
It's exactly what they do. And they're going, stop the watering, man. Leave me alone. I don't need no drinks.
I'm swollen.
Oh, geez. But, like I was talking about the junipers, after you planted them and they're established, like, you should never have to water them again. I mean, you can if you want, but it's a waste. Why waste it? You put your water where it counts, like on your vegetable garden or wash your car or something.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, like a grouping of hydrangeas is going to need frequent watering in the summer. Because they're a big leaf, and if it gets too hot and it's too much sun, they will wilt, and the leaves will kind of bend down and just kind of be real limp. And you can shoot a couple of gallons of water to the root system, and within an hour, bingo!
Wow,
they look good again.
Nice.
I mean, that's how fast that they react. So, you know, they are absolutely not compatible with junipers, so don't mix the bunch. You know, each plant has its own growth limitations
pattern, yeah.
and patterns and abilities. And that's why it's so important when you go to buy plants, you have to ask pertinent questions as to, hey, how do I make this thing live? Or can I mix these plants with those plants? Will I hurt one and one will be good? Or, you know, whatever comes to your mind. Because when I'm waiting on customers at our nursery, which is very seldom because I'm always out on the road bidding landscapes or something like that, I always ask the client, I say, now, what kind of water system do you have? Well, I water with a sprinkler, or I water with a hose, and then I explain all this to them while we're standing there, and show them. I've got so many demonstration plantings around the nursery that I can show them, this is what happens when they get the right kind of water. This is what happens if they're overwatered. You can see that because occasionally we mess up and somebody overwaters something.
Yep.
But when they see that, they get the, I understand now. That's probably why my such and such is not doing so good. I water it every day, you know.
Like your cactus.
Yeah, like the cactus. No, that, not too, nah, I don't know. But, you know, like I say, the hydrangeas, they're not compatible with a juniper. They're not going to do any good. They have separate and different needs, just like people. Separate and different needs. Yeah, you can take that politically if you like. But and the same can be said about fertilizers, fertilizer requirements. All plants do not require the same type or the same quality of fertilizer. Each variety of plants has a different need or a different capability of fertilizer absorption or those kinds of things or timing during the year, and that's why you want to be aware. You don't want to spend $500 on plants, take them home, put them in the wrong order just because they look cute doesn't mean they're going to all survive equally, and fertilize them all the same with the same, say, Triple 16. No, not Triple 16. That's for hay.
Miracle-Gro.
Yeah. Well, Miracle-Gro is not bad.
Oh, okay.
You know, that, all plants can take Miracle-Gro because it's like a quick fix. It's like eating a Snickers bar when you're hungry, you know?
Oh, yeah, okay.
They're good.
Yep. So that's good stuff.
Yeah. Now, when you're planting, you're locating your plants. Let's say you have a slope. And plants on a slope may require maybe a basin built around them, like a little berm, so that the water, when you do water, it just doesn't run all downhill, you know, to the bottom.
Yeah.
So it actually stops. Doesn't have to be a big, gigantic thing. Just a little bit of soil made into a little stop so that when you do water, the water stops at the base of the plant and actually soaks down into the plant. And you're not wasting water that way. You're getting it specifically to where it needs to go, and it does the most good then. Now, as those plants on that slope get larger and they get more wide and they cover more areas, you know, that's not as important because they've been in there a year or two, and their roots are more mature and they're spread out. So at that time, maybe wholesale watering will work. As long as you don't concentrate on one area where you cause erosion or you cause water to go down in one area, that it's equally spread at a time rate where the soil will accept it and take it down rather than just run off.
Right.
You know, things like that should be common sense, but they're not if you don't have the experience.
And you don't know.
And you just don't know.
Yeah.
And you're watering, but most of it's going down the slope. And you go, gee whiz, how do I stop that? Well, you build a berm or you put some bark mulch on there. Bark mulch is great because the water won't run on the bark mulch. It'll soak into the bark mulch and eventually soak into the soil.
Down.
Yeah. Bark mulch is a great, great commodity. And once they discovered, the lumber people discovered how needed it was, that's when they started charging money for it. I used to get it for free when I first started business. Yeah, get rid of this stuff. We're just going to burn it anyway. You notice they don't have any more wigwam burners?
Yes.
Notice they don't burn any more bark mulch and sawdust? No, they sell it. They make lots of money on it.
We used to use that to clean the barn with every week.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We used to use it in our chicken coops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
well, it's probably a good time for a break, eh?
Okay.
The final break of this afternoon on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show.
673-4464. One last call if you want.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, what do we got? We got 83 degrees now, Mike.
Oh boy, I'm already cold. So I'm talking about water and water conservation and how to stretch your water to all your plants and not run your bill up to about $1,000 a month.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I had a client out in Garden Valley, and I landscaped their home, 15 years ago or something like that. And we've taken care of it and done the maintenance for them and all that. Called me up one day and says, hey, you know, our water bill was horrendous. Are the sprinklers okay? So my brother and I went out there and turned all the zones on and didn't see any breaks. Everything was working properly. Well, they had a swimming pool in the back. And one of the main pipes for the swimming pool broke.
Oh, no.
And the water was pouring out of that pipe. It's domestic city water pouring out of the pipe. But you can't tell because along the walls of the swimming pool are the drains. So the excess
was
just draining out.
Wow.
Well, they finally called the pool guy, and their bill was just amazing. You know, $1,000, $900 a month or some just unbelievable amount. You know, so water conservation, and if you have those kinds of things, make sure you get somebody in there to check it out and not get wrapped for a lot of money.
Yeah, maybe your neighbor dug into it for their little grow or something.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Yeah, I guess you just did. One of the best ways for water conservation that I've found around here is to mulch your plant beds with 3 to 4 inches of old bark mulch. We've got more old bark mulch than we ever use. And this is going to keep the moisture closer to the plant roots. And it's going to stop any or most of runoff that might occur in case we got some heavy rain and it wouldn't just wash it all away. The bark mulch clings together. It stays there. And if you put 2 or 3 inches around your plants, what happens is the moisture in the plant's root system does not evaporate from the ground because the bark mulch is so heavy on top of it. It is damp as well, so you don't have to water as much.
It's like an electric blanket.
Exactly, only it's not electric.
Not electric.
But that, you know, 3 or 4 inches of old bark, and that's why we do that. And once the bark is damp, it may look bone dry on top, but you kick some of the top stuff away and it's damp. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just evaporate very quickly. It's really great stuff. And when you mix it in with your planting soil and plant in it, you can be assured that when you water your plant, the soil may dry out very quickly, but the bark mulch will retain that moisture and feed the plant. You know, it's really a good thing.
Two worlds in one.
Yes, sir. It is. And and not only, like I say, you stop runoff, but all that mulch eventually breaks down and feeds your plants in the long run. It just breaks down into good organic material. And you put 3 inches in, and then 2 years later you're going, gosh, the bark isn't very deep. Well, it's because it's decomposing. You can't see it. And as it decomposes and becomes one with the soil underneath, the level actually drops, and you go, wow, where's our bark mulch going? Well, every couple of years, add another inch or two just to for sustained health and water conservation. Plus, it looks good. You know, fresh bark. It looks good.
Sometimes it smells good.
It does. And mulch also helps in erosion control on slopes. We found that to be true. If you're planting a slope and it's got some plant ground covers, junipers or whatever type of ground covers it might be, and you put heavy mulch on it, when it does rain excessively hard, it used to, or too much water from a sprinkler system or a hose, it's not going to erode it down the hill. It's going to, that bark mulch will stop it. It will soak it up like a giant sponge.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Interesting.
Yes,
yeah.
It is. So in normal rainfall, inch and a half a day for 5 or 6 days, that won't affect the bark at all. I guess a flood would, of course. You know, a tsunami would
1964
move
in. Flood.
Yeah. And how much time we got?
Oh, we got about 2-3 minutes.
2-3 minutes. Well, I got 15 minutes worth of notes here. Well, you know, when some of my clients request a low-maintenance landscape, that will also indicate a landscape that requires less water, less labor. So all these things I've been talking about this past hour make a big play into that type of landscape. They want a low-maintenance one that they don't have to do a lot of work, but they want it pretty.
Yeah.
Okay, so less water means a lesser water bill, and less labor is the bark mulch on top. You have what?
We have a phone call. Do we have time?
I don't know. You're the boss.
We got about a minute. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
No, I tried to make this real quick. Hey, okay. I have a lawn that has that clay dirt.
Yep.
And I want to try to put some topsoil or something on top so I have a better grass next year. Do I rototiller that in or just lay it on top and reseed it?
Well, first thing you do is cut the lawn short, then go rent an aerating machine which pulls plugs of soil out, and then top dress it with the topsoil, say a half an inch, and seed it and fertilize it, and it'll be good to go.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
All righty. Continue your thoughts.
I don't know. You keep giving me all these reports, and we only got 12 seconds left.
Oh, it's probably about 40 seconds.
Oh, 40 seconds. I hope you guys have learned something out there. I mean, this stuff really makes sense, and it really will help you on your landscape budget, on how your plants look long run, and how your overall health in your yard, your plant health, your yard health, your soil health will improve throughout the years if you stick with these principles. I guarantee it. No lie. I'm not going to say any more.
That's it?
Yeah.
No more.
No more. No mas.
We got 9, 8.
7, 6.
5.
4.
3.
2, 1.
There we go. We're done.
Bye.
That was a weird way to wrap it up.
We're weird here.
We have our fun.
Oh, gosh.
All right. We'll catch you next time, Mike.
Okie dokie. Thank you.
The Afternoon Report is next on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.